Greetings, Internet, and welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 74, Interview with Erica Bartlett. Erica is an artist, event and project manager, and community advocate for artists and business in Southwest Washington. In this episode, we talk about how artists and business owners need each other, the importance of community, and intuition and meditation. Show notes for this episode are available at gwtw.co/74. Are you looking for more tips on how to get your work to work? Sign up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at thecuriositylab.net or at the bottom of each show's page. Not only will you get an email delivered straight to your inbox on Mondays with stories and inspiration designed to spark your creativity and curiosity, but you'll also receive my latest guides, Build Your Platform and DIY Documentary. All right, you ready for this interview with Erica? Hey, Editor Chris, cue the music. Erica, thank you for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and what you do?
My name is Erica Bartlett. I'm an artist and a business owner. I also host a series of networking events for artists called Arts and Biz.
Very
that
cool.
Keeps me pretty busy.
I bet it does. So when we first met, we started talking like we were old friends. And that was very refreshing. And it was actually something that was very, I don't know if it was striking, but it was memorable for sure. Is that something that you consciously do with everyone you meet, or is this just an exception?
I don't think I consciously do that. Okay, so maybe this will be self-deprecating, but are you familiar with the show 30 Rock? Were you ever a 30 Rock fan?
Not too much, but I know of the show.
So there's one episode where they show the world through everybody's eyes. So, like, Jack Donaghy sees everything, you know, there's, like, dollar signs over everything. And Kenneth, the page, he sees the world like everybody's a Muppet. And it was funny to me because I don't see everybody as a Muppet, of course, but I don't really, like, I don't know, I don't, when I meet people, I'm not thinking anything, you know. I pretty much just am, I try to be pretty present, yeah. You know, just kind of a clean slate, you know. For the most part, when I meet people. So
you're an artist and your art is about light. It's about landscape and boundlessness, represented through patterns of the sky. What has been your journey to get to where you're at today?
It's not really been a straight path. And I don't think most good things are like the things that are worth it are never on a straight path. So I've been a practicing artist, you know, in terms of like a regular, like serious practice for the last decade. I had a studio space up in Bellingham, Washington, where I was living before this. And I primarily painted and drew like really realistic stuff. And at the time, I was also volunteering at an art museum doing tours for the public, like art education. And I just loved the way some of the stuff that I was seeing, it was like they, because I didn't go to art school, I studied languages in school. So I've always been chatty. but I loved the way that these artists would tell stories with their materials. And it was like the, it was like what they were using and the processes paired and like we're in tandem with, you know, this storyline that was in their mind or this idea that they had. So I definitely aspired to that and did a lot of different, you know, just kind of like freeing up and trying to use some different like techniques and really like allowed myself to like break free from what I was starting to find boring. And dislike about my work and, you know, try to move into different processes. And part of that creative rut, I picked up David Lynch's book, Big Fish, and you know, started wondering about meditation because I was reading that that was a great way to get out of a creative rut or increase your creativity. And I just had no idea that it was going to like change my thinking so profoundly, like that it was going to literally create this like transformation in the way that I would see the world and see myself and the way that I would like talk to myself about, you know, things like the inner dialogue I was having. It's just something about that practice really cleaned up the room. Like it cleaned up my thinking quite a bit, and allowed me to focus and, you know, become, I think, more than anything, more aware. And I think awareness really lends to art. I think that that is a very important thing for people to have. And really in any practice that they're doing, if you're going to do anything as an art, like if you're a CPA, you know, and you want to really do it well, or if you're an artist and you really want to do it well, having that awareness and that sort of like just presence of thought makes, I think it makes anything that you're doing a lot better.
So when you're talking about awareness, is it a internal personal awareness? Is it your awareness to the external community? Is it all of that? Is it none of that? What do you mean by awareness?
One of my favorite meditation teachers is Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, and there's one where he's like introduces and he says, you know, the three rules are you do nothing, you want nothing, and you are nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like where you start to just get super present. So like in your day-to-day interactions, you're just, it's like, maybe a more observant state, but that observance, you're observing also your own kind of your thoughts and your, you know, reactions to things. And I don't know, it's really a difficult thing to really totally go like, because I feel like I'm still a student. I'm still learning. But it's just, I mean, anything from, say, like a tense moment, maybe if you're like having anxiety or something, and like learning to kind of accept that that's happening and focusing. I tend to focus on nature. That's just where I go. You know, or if you're in like sort of a tense interaction, maybe in a supermarket, or, you know, somebody's reacting to you, or there's just something like troublesome happening, it's that sort of that stepping back. And none of us are perfect, but, you know, the awareness that like, it's all good. You know, it's just, it's all good. And how much can you really like control? And yeah, I'm probably starting to babble right now because I'm really trying to like put my finger on something and I can't quite get there, but.
It's all right. Isn't that the whole point of art, is to try to get somewhere and maybe not actually get there, but you get a little bit closer each time.
And you keep practicing.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned David Lynch's Big Fish book, because that's one of my favorite books that he's written, because it's intriguing to look at the study of his films through the lens of meditation and his own process of, as you described, being a student. And so it's just really fascinating to see someone of that stature, someone of that renown, you know, talking at a very human level about art and film.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, you know, going back to that awareness, you know, I think, and how it ties into art, like one of my favorite parts is his indication that, you know, you're constantly following your gut instinct. That is a very common thread that's taught throughout, you know, like in terms of like focus and figuring out like how to like get around your monkey mind. Like your monkey mind is kind of the mind that's always looking for something better and always looking for pleasure. But your focused mind recognizes the things that are important because they keep returning and they keep coming back, or they line up in time, right? So I loved the part where he's talking about in Blue Velvet when they pick up the light, you know, and they sing the Roy Orbison song using the light as a microphone. I mean, just things like that, that, you know, maybe it appears absurd or it sounds absurd, you know, but it works. And yeah, it's like, it's your gut, you know, telling you the right thing. So
Well, and I think you can say that a lot about his visual images that he chooses to use.
Yeah.
My wife and I are going through the Twin Peaks revival right now.
Oh, nice.
And there's so many images where you're just like, what just happened? What does that mean? And it's fascinating because it's like you're looking at an artist that's nearing, you know, I don't want to say the end of his life, but he's definitely in the twilight years of his life. And yet he's still capturing these moments of absurdity and these moments of gut instinct. And it's just fascinating to see.
Yeah, because we react to that. We have a very visceral reaction to those things. And some of that probably goes back to the ideas of like unified field and what I really truly believe, which is that there is oneness, like that we, you know, like when there's pain, I mean, I feel pain when I see somebody else in pain. Like I think most of us do. I think we have different suits, you know, that we wear, different sort of costumes that we have to put on in order to like stay within these pressures of life. But I think our natural state really does connect to one another.
One of the things on your website that was interesting was you mentioned that there are studies that show art tapping into the same areas of the brain as meditation. So what does art as meditation look like for you?
The studies that the particular study that I was referring to actually talks about how us viewing art, you know, when you're viewing art, it taps into that same space. The value of visual communication is that it connects with you on a different level where you have to look and observe and find that sort of awareness that you find when you're in meditation. Maybe you have to get rid of preconceived notions and preconceived notions about yourself or whatever. So literally you do nothing and you are nothing. You're just looking, right? And you're reacting however you're reacting, and that's totally okay. But it's really the practice of looking and understanding and using that very human skill where your mind is like kind of being informed by what you're seeing and also what you're feeling. And we do that every day. I mean, we get that, you know, I mean, it's like Facebook's design, like the visual design. And I don't know if I can talk, well, we're not like on national news or something, but like, you know, social media, it's designed, and technology is designed to be very instinctual to and interactive with us and with our senses as humans. Art does the same thing. Advertising does the same thing. The purpose of art, though, is that when you're meditating on art, you're meditating on an idea that somebody else is trying to communicate. And either that can inspire you, or maybe a different art piece can inspire you. But it's really that visual communication of an idea. In terms of making art, I think most, you know, makers and creators, I think people even who learn to make art and maybe weren't traditional or professional artists find it very almost empowering to be able to make something. And I don't know if it's because we've become so distant from making our stuff, but the reaction that I get from a lot of people is that they just feel so empowered that they accomplished this thing. I think people who can't stand not to make things or not to create, like I think people who get that creative bite, you know, they just can't stop. It's because it's really like a centering, you know, it's a centering process. Like I feel really integrated when I'm working and when I'm making things because I'm using all the faculties in balance that I have. So,
and that when you're talking about how creating art really integrates you and helps you see all of these different areas of your life and how you fit into the world, was that part of the discovery of your artistic journey as well?
Yeah, it was definitely where I was like, this is something I want to keep doing because I feel good. You know, I feel good when I'm doing this. And I don't think that work necessarily needs to be something that you hate doing. You know, there's that like thing of like, work's just something you do and not everybody likes. I don't like making art every day. I don't, you know, I just had a kind of a little bit of a like temper tantrum the other day because some stuff I've been working so hard on hasn't worked very well. But I feel like it's like I'm using my skills to the fullest, and I'm making like a, you know, something that's like my contribution. Like I can work, I worked in lots of different fields and I've contributed in a lot of ways and I love helping others. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but I don't make feel like I'm making a contribution until I do what I'm doing the best.
You mentioned on your website as well, a passion for functional art. What is functional art? I'm intrigued when people use the label functional.
I think, you know, I mean, I almost, now that we've talked about this, I almost want to like go back and word that in a way, because it's not necessarily just functional art, like a thing, but it's more the function of art. Like, how is it useful? There is like a really big obstacle that you have to get over with people, that art is self-serving, you know, that it's really just like the artist's like individual selfish expression that just serves them, that it actually serves a purpose in terms of, you know, how it changes the way that we think and how it kind of, you know, you exercise problem solving, you're exercising critical thinking. I think critical thinking is really important. You know, I think it's trying to get people to see the value and the like how art like works kind of. But then also it ties into my desire to turn my work, like scale it into things that are more like a part of like a building, like a, you know, something that is actually built into an atmosphere, and then serves the purpose of how it makes, you know, the atmosphere or the environment feel better for the people that are in it. So really examining how it all kind of works, and the intention behind it.
So it's almost as if you're trying to manifest empathy in your art.
So that'd be cool.
How wild would that be?
Yeah. And I mean, in a sense, yeah, it's really trying to get like spaces where people can be a little bit more like calm and less reactive and more, you know, sort of considerate and, you know, really tap into that part that makes them a little bit like quiet and like maybe blank a little bit, you know.
Which is very much against almost what society wants us to be. It almost seems like we look at the function of social media, we look at the function of the news and all of these stimuli, and it's almost as if it wants to fill us to the point of, you know, gluttony, as opposed to eliminating and emptying us of ourselves.
Things. I mean, I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's really a gluttony of thought, almost a gluttony of thought and a gluttony of ideas. And it doesn't really leave much room for the individual to really like process or be, you know, to kind of sort through what's going on, you know. Actually, what you just said really, I mean, it brings up a lot of stuff, because it's, you know, you see people like reacting to each other and angry and frustrated and hurting, or just completely like almost just shut down and distracted. You know, it's the point of distraction that it's kind of like depressing, because you really want to see their lights shine.
And even like in the other hand of where you show your art or you show the work that you've poured your heart and soul into, and it's met with the response of a thumbs up emoji or that's great, or, you know, just really surface level comments that are just a reaction.
It's so funny. My girlfriend, once we joked that like one day all of our, like, we're only going to be able to process our emotions through like a hashtag. And I think about that a lot when I see the emojis, is like, because a lot of times the emoji doesn't have like the, maybe the selection doesn't have the one you're looking for, you know. And
now we can just draw our own.
The struggle is real. Yeah. And maybe we need to start doing that, Chris. Maybe I need to just start that trend.
Absolutely. So before we transition to, you know, art and biz, I'm going to ask a really large question that, you know, probably will derail the conversation a little bit, but I want to anyway. But to you, what is art?
Well, you know, there's a lot of art that I'm not very, like, I was just talking to somebody the other day about how I really don't know very much about, say, performance art. I mean, I've always enjoyed going to, like, performances and everything, but I don't really understand, like, how I don't understand how it's put together, or the process, or what, you know, the tools are that people use for, so for an example, I wouldn't even necessarily call myself an expert on, say, like, cultural art. I really like Seth Godin's definition that it's not necessarily something you paint on the wall or hang on the wall, but that it actually has more to do with what you, like, if it's something that, and I don't want to say it's something that people respond to necessarily, because I think people that make things or do things for their own pleasure or in silence or in quiet, you know, those can be art too, but it's really the, I think it's the process of how you are communicating your truest, like, most sincerest, maybe, like an essence almost, using your brain. And then using your, like, skills, you know, whatever those skills are. So if you're, like, in the garden, I mean, I met a gardener the other night. He was talking about how he loves to sit and watch, and he'll make a little puddle with the hose. And then there's these birds that'll all scatter over to the puddle and they'll splash around. And he was just at peace. You know, you could tell it was just, like, really his truest, most, like, essential self doing this thing that was just good in the moment, you know, just for whatever purpose, or no purpose at all, maybe. I don't know. That's a pretty broad question.
Yes, it is. I apologize.
I think we also need to find another word for art, you know, like, it's like, sometimes I'm like, we've used art so many times in this paragraph, and we really haven't described anything. So maybe we need to find, you know, better vocabulary to talk about that.
Well, we know that artists need business and benefactors, but why does business need artists?
On the more, like, surface level, I think the trend has been that art is a great way to bring attention, or to bring, like, you know, literally, like, people to your doorstep. You know, it's the trend that's, like, basically it's lowered the barrier for entry for people to become artists, which can be, like, anything, good and bad. And then it's also brought art to the public in a very, like, accessible way, which is good in a lot of ways, but at the same time, because of that, saturation could be bad. A lot of things, I think, that they're great for the arts and, you know, culture and, you know, the community in general, but in terms of from a business perspective, maybe they're bad. And then also, you know, making money for other people, like, art tends to be what makes people money at auctions. It's what makes people money in their businesses when they're showing art. I mean, it really tends to actually, but makes cities money. You know, it's a huge part of economic development to say we're going to put in all this art, whether it's just, like, drag and drop, you know, sculptures, or if it's murals or whatever. And it's so positive for the community. It's so good for the community to have things that feel good and make them happy in their neighborhoods. But in terms of the attitude towards it being just, you know, something that should just be accessible, that an artist's mind and body should just be, like, on permanent free retainer to everybody, is, you know, sort of bad for business. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and that's very much what's happening culturally, is that, you know, we get so much for free that we're demanding everything almost for free, especially with the label of art, culture, and music.
Yeah, we really don't like paying for labor in our culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, from bad tipping to, you know, like, I mean, I don't think that like sweatshop that ever went away. I hate bringing people to this negative place, but I think it really has to be discussed. Like, the people really just dislike labor. And I think technology has now fed into that even more, because I think that there's a little bit of this, it'll be this utopia where we won't have to work, you know. Mm-hmm. I was reading somewhere that they want to start a universal basic income, and I was like, who wrote this, you know? So I go down to the bottom of the page, and it's like, well, this was originally published in this other publication. So I'm like, well, who does that publication? And then you go to that publication, and it's all written by people who are like obsessed with singularity and, you know, artificial intelligence. And I'm like, oh, well, of course they think that that would be great, you know. I don't think that a lack of labor or a lack of things to do is necessarily the best thing for a human. I think where we've gotten off track is really that we are exploiting people's labor and we're exploiting people's abilities to work. I think that that's really the negative mentality in our culture, that we don't want to like see somebody work and then actually be positive, you know, have a positive reinforcement for that work. We just, you know, are begrudged that we have to tip the waiter at Applebee's, or that the contractor costs so much, or, right, you know, that the artist wants to be paid or whatever.
We automatically view business as evil because, you know, they understand the need for money and paying for labor. And so we tend to at times throw all business into the bucket of evil, instead of looking for the businesses and the business owners who are trying to elevate the game and, you know, support labor and pay fair wages.
Yeah, and do good things for the community. I mean, yeah, you know, there's a pretty, you know, well-known local business that's had problems this last couple years with people wanting to unionize, and they're one of the few businesses that you can actually go and you're getting quality food. And part of that expense is because you're getting, you know, quality product that's employing other people in other industries. I mean, I think that's the cool part of business, is that it's the cross-pollination of economy, you know, where your business is thriving and it's actually helping this other business thrive. And it's, you know, it's an ecosystem. It's a living thing. It's not this thing where one person wins and is always winning and everybody else is just like, you know, kind of holding up the chariot or whatever.
So you co-created an organization called Arts and Biz, mm-hmm, which is, and I'm going to quote from your website, which is bridging the gap between arts and business in Southwest Washington by fostering connections and encouraging collaboration in the community. Why is Arts and Biz important to you, and how has it impacted your work and life?
Well, it was born from the idea that we just didn't really have, like, if you know, Vancouver is a like crazy networking town. There's just like networking everywhere. So it was kind of born from this idea that like creatives didn't really have that place that was like theirs. Like, you know, we're not going to want to go necessarily to another environment that's like a turn off for our personality types or our passions. So kind of trying to make a place where it's like has that environment that we want to be in and that we feel excited by. The other reason why I started it and the reason why it's so important to me is because when I was working in my studio previously, you know, I would spend so much time alone, and I personally needed more connection. There's a really great concept that a friend told me about where you have this triangle. It's like kind of your, you know, triangle of balance. And there's consumption, connection, and creation. And for me, like my triangle is like really, really like long on the connection and the creation side. So recognizing that I really just needed to be around friends and everything, but that I found time because, you know, if you become passionate about something you're doing, it's like the things that the other stuff around what you're doing almost has to feed that creativity, and it has to feed that mission. And so I really wanted to be around other creatives or people who I could like talk openly about ideas with and these things that I was processing without kind of meeting that glazed stare. Or on the other hand, having to suppress it in order to fit into situations where maybe I wasn't necessarily interested or challenged. So I've been so excited because it served that purpose. I've made so many friends here since we moved back in 2015, and artists and non-artists alike who just are thinking, that have sort of the same values. And it's a great community to be around.
What do you hope artists learn in the meetings that you put on with Art and Biz?
You know, I mostly hope that they get out of it what they need to get out of it, whether it's that, you know, they want to better understand sort of maybe a problem they're working through. I mean, a lot of artists that I've been talking to since I've moved down here, and especially since I've started challenging myself to use new materials, like a lot of times we're just troubleshooting, you know, like, well, what worked for you, or do you know of anything, or I'm having this challenge, and they're like, oh, have you checked out, you know, whatever, different like vellum, or, you know, just the different techniques and everything. So that's one thing that could be helpful. I think meeting other people and possibly being turned on to different opportunities. Like, there's a lot of, I get people asking me to do different art stuff all the time, and I'm like, well, I don't really do that, but this person does. And I think that that's something that's really positive for an artist to be able to do, rather than try to, one, like, be like the, some sort of like a dancing monkey or something, you know, where you're trying to like do everything that everybody asks, where maybe somebody else, you could actually help them out by passing that opportunity along. So getting to know other artists and what they do so that you can foster those connections. And then just the sort of like developing the industry. I mean, a lot of people who are not in the arts community want to support us, but they don't know how to, because they don't really see. It kind of goes back to that, like, how do you advocate for something if you've got 100 or 100,000 different voices? Whereas if you can kind of all get on the same page and agree, well, what really, like, what do we all have in common that serves us? And what do we all have in common that we're willing to do in order to promote our industry? So having maybe a little bit more of a singular voice when advocating for the industry, you know, outside of our industry, I think is helpful.
So when you describe the singular voice, mm-hmm. are you describing community?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe like a common mission. I think just like any other organization, you know, it's not going to fit. Not everybody's going to want to be a part of it, and that's okay. But the people who have the same mission that I kind of have, it'd be great to be on board together in that same vision, you know, of a healthy relationship with arts and industry.
How are we losing a sense of community, and how can we build it back up?
Well, we recently had a discussion about community, and a great contribution to that discussion, somebody talked about how technology, one, makes you feel like you're being really productive when maybe you're not doing anything at all. And then also, it maybe you start to work or create for an audience that's much further away and lose touch with your more immediate community. So I think those were both really good examples of how, like, it's sort of a deterioration. But there's really just that face-to-face and human interaction, like, where it's like you're, maybe it's like all the different parts of the experience that are really important to connection. And I don't think you necessarily get that on technology. I mean, even like right now, you and I talking through Skype, I love it that I can see your expressions. I can see your sketchboard in the back, and I love that. So I can see you, like, I get to know you better with all these visual cues, or like how we react to imperfection in life. When we first met, remember there was that leak in the coffee house, like the wall was like dripping down, you know, and it's like, how do we react to that? And how do those sort of like imperfections in life react? In technology, it's all pretty pared down to the most efficient And almost manipulative. I mean, in a sense, it's kind of manipulating your emotions a little bit. So I think that a good face-to-face conversation or, you know, a good party is always good, or just a good community event or a walk. Like, those are all things that I think are really important to community.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, too, when we talked a couple weeks ago, just that you wanted to have community listening parties again so that people could listen to music. And that stuck with me ever since you mentioned that. And I've been thinking a lot about the fact that just sitting down and listening to music with people is fascinating.
Yeah, I got to get that thing going. I think about it literally every day. And I guess I haven't, you know, maybe just like put one foot in front of the other to make it happen. I think I'm like waiting on other people a little bit. And I think I need to just like, that's one of the, when I was talking about ideas that keep returning to you, that's a big one that just keeps coming back to me. And I'm so excited about it. I literally have like a list of 50 different, like, we probably would have to do a listening party once a week. And we would start to get through like my own list. I only can imagine that people are going to want to like make their own contributions. Mm-hmm. That's a very perfect example of where my ego struggles, because I want to control the music. It's like, that's another thing that we do in life, is we kind of are like, let me pick the next song. But yeah, I think that could be a really positive thing, you know, and to make sure that it's an accessible thing that people feel welcome at. So my list has everybody from like Tupac to like Cuban jazz. I mean, it's got a wide variety. And I've even talked to other people about like, well, what else could we listen to that really just like brings people in from a lot of different. So I think that's where we would have to start, maybe taking in some contribution of what people want to hear, because that's the way to, you know, make it something that's more welcoming for everybody, if there's some sort of a community participation in the process of it. Mm-hmm. And then the licensing and stuff, we'd have to do a license and everything, so. But
that always throws things off.
It's actually this particular license, they have a great event one, and it's really not cost prohibitive and pretty easy to do, so. But that's important to me, you know, to do that and do it the right way.
So if you could give one resource, say a book, a video, audiobook, to any artist or to anyone, what would it be and why?
You told me that you were going to ask me this, and I'm like so stumped. I'm so stumped. There's so much to read and so many resources out there. And, you know, I don't even know if it's like media that would be a resource or if it would be like a skill. I would say probably if it was like a skill, that, you know, perseverance is probably the most important thing. I don't know that I could pick a piece of media, but I would say that in terms of a tool in your toolbox, that perseverance is a pretty important one.
Absolutely. What are you excited about today?
Well, I've got some family in town right now. My husband's finished a pretty important milestone. He's graduated from the Clark Technical Mechatronics program, and that's been a really, yeah, and I'm just really proud of him. He's worked really hard, so I'm just really excited for the next couple of days of celebrating that. And I tried to surprise him with a gift, and I know that the surprise has already been broken by somebody else in our family, which is, you know, totally okay. I was really disappointed. Like, I kind of got teary-eyed because I'd been working so hard on this big thing being a surprise, but these things happen. So yeah, I'm just mostly excited to see him pretend to be surprised.
Well, final question. You know, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And so do you have any shows or events coming up that you would love to tell people about?
I've got a show coming up at Angst Gallery this next month. It opens on the 7th, Friday the 7th. And there'll be just, you know, a general First Friday reception. And then the show will be up through the month of July. And then also, which, if people want to meet and chat, you know, then by all means, I think it would be great for people to reach out and connect with me, and we can go meet down there and chat about the work. And then also our next Arts and Biz is July 30th. And you can get tickets for that on my website. And you can also read more about it on Facebook at our Arts Plus Biz 360 page.
Awesome. Well, Erica, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. I hope you have a wonderful day and keep making awesome art.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much to Erica for taking time to talk about her work, why business is important for artists, and sharing how she is building community. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. It means a lot to me that you're here. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends and other creative professionals and entrepreneurs? Subscribe on iTunes and Android devices by clicking the subscription links found at gwtw.co. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work? Or maybe you need some advice? Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on most social networks. I'm at CM Studios or at GWTW Podcast on Twitter, at Chris Martin Studios or at GWTW Podcast on Facebook, and at CM Studios on Instagram. Earlier in the interview, Erica mentioned David Lynch's book, Catching the Big Fish. And so I wanted to share just a quick quote from this book on intuition. Life is filled with abstractions, and the only way we make heads or tails of it is through intuition. Intuition is seeing the solution, seeing it, knowing it. It's emotion and intellect going together. How do you get something to feel right? Everybody's got the same tools, the camera and the tapes and the world and actors. But in putting those parts together, there are differences. That's where intuition enters. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.